Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast, heard here domestically in the United States and abroad. As always, thank you for tuning in, and I'll just get it out of the way real quick. Please head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces, and of course, email both John and I at modstate@modstate.com for anything. And then, of course, mine is nwellein@modstate.com if you're like, screw that guy. John, how are you?
Brother, I'm a lot better now that I'm here. And Excellent. Yeah, Forza Italia. Thank you to the Italians for joining us, the Chinese, all over. I mean, this, we've got an audience.
The Chinese. Good night. We were precasting and we didn't even talk about that whole debacle. I think that's probably a whole episode in itself.
It is. But I say thank you to our listeners globally. Yes. About 30% of our audience on Podomatic. Now the metrics get a little stranger on iTunes and whatnot, but thank you all wherever you are.
Yeah. So, well, from early morning work today to back to school work on bond valuation and yield to maturity to a little deer hunting this evening and back to bond valuation and now to geopolitics and the Mod State Podcast. I've had a busy day. I know you were getting off the highway earlier, so I take it you've had a busy day as well. So we've got a lot of material to grind through.
I got a lot to do between now and being back in economics class in January at Penn State. So yeah. It's go, go, go.
Indeed. So
you relate.
Yes, I certainly can. And, it we might miss in the week to link up, but I think there's just so much happening out there at such a fast pace that it really does it does behoove us to sit down. And even if we can make 30 minutes of this, is to just walk through some of this stuff. And some of the things that we won't even touch on in this podcast is some of this sort of corporate responsibility and the difference between revenue and business growth and free speech. So there's a lot of interesting stuff with capitalism and really democracy, the values of democracy that's been, been
and
playing.
We've been wanting to do the Golden Heights.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a dance.
So, I think we'll save that for another podcast because I quite find the issue of corporate social responsibility an interesting thing because I do believe that as capitalism in the United States and westernized countries evolves, I think the idea of leadership and corporate responsibility will change as well. But that's for another podcast because good night. It just keeps rolling, man. And we've got some pivots. We've got some transitions. So we'll start with the one that's least.
Lots of what have yous.
The least transitionable, if you will. And that is just kind of following up. The last two podcast episodes, we've really touched on the impeachment inquiry itself, like the Trump's actions, et cetera. And I will say that, I was hoping for an episode where we would be able to talk about something different because I feel like we'd be repeating ourselves. However, there are just things that continue to come up here that, as we said in precast, just don't look good. And I, as taking sort of a central, or I'd say the 30,000 foot view of things, trying not to place judgment in places without due process, because I know that I would appreciate due process, and I think we all have appreciated instances of due process. However,
you can get due process while being carved up in the Fourth Estate, the Court of Public Opinion.
And that's true. However, it's hard when things we have elucidations of people that are very close to the president dealing with people who are literally being charged with campaign finance violations, who are buying one-way tickets to Europe.
That sounds nice.
And, yeah, right. And, have Ukrainian ties, et cetera. And that is our one and only, and I believe a, and I don't know how much you are now, but you've definitely been well researched in the life of Rudy Giuliani, who is now the president's private attorney, who was recently at a breakfast with these two guys. I'm not going to pronounce their names, but anyway, they bought one-way tickets to Europe. I think it was Vienna or something like that. Who of note, Rudy Giuliani was going to go there later. However, they got picked up at Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., and were formally charged.
Not by cabs.
No, not at all. No, so
his associates got arrested, and he decided, well, that was inconvenient, and really kind of it threw a bee in his bonnet, if you will, in terms of carrying out the plan. This vacation was off, and yeah, I'm fairly well versed in Mayor Giuliani through the cessation of his 2008 presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. After that, we kind of lost touch after a while.
Yeah. Well, I will say that, you know, this whole situation is, well, new shit has come to light, and right,
my money, you bum.
we can't go without a good Big Lebowski quote. But you know, ultimately, we don't know what will come of this. There's really not much more to talk about because we don't know. However, these are the circumstances that come up that could probably that ultimately won't do well with the president's case in terms of corruption. And I don't mean that the president himself is utterly corrupt, but if you can trace lines of corruption by literally 3 degrees of separation from the president to Rudy Giuliani to these guys have met Trump. I mean, there's pictures with them, and I'm not saying that the president should be held responsible for everyone he shakes hands with. That's not the case. However, when you have this type of degrees of separation, it just doesn't look good. And this will inevitably be tied to the impeachment inquiry. I'm sure there'll be subpoenas around it.
I do find it, you raised several good points, but I got to say, I do find it somewhat quasi-humorous, I suppose. Whenever someone points out the inherent corruption with Donald Trump, because I'm going... As if he really got there and changed that very much.
Yeah, and again, I call it
Babylon for a reason.
I realize all that. It for the president of the United States, this was something I was thinking about too before we kind of move on to the next topic here. And I was thinking about this today, and we've talked about this before, but if the president had a different persona, like if he got to the White House and his persona changed, like he became quote unquote more presidential or more diplomatic, maybe, that I think it would be harder for the Fourth Estate. It would be harder for people who are very against the president to go after him the same way that they do. But because he carried the asshole persona into the most powerful position in the world, that when these things come up, when impeachment inquiries come up or when dirt's pulled up, there really is no empathy, there is no sympathy, there is no there's no sensitivity for it, because
there's no good personality type when it comes to being a national Republican and the media, though.
Okay, yes,
that
works. But
I mean, there was no mercy shown President Nixon, who by all accounts and in photographs wouldn't even unbutton his coat in the Oval Office, such was the esteem he had for the office. So, I mean, let's remember, Trump could have been a saint.
I understand that, but this is where I disagree a bit. If he had won the presidential election with maybe the persona of a Jeb Bush, okay, somehow, like,
what
had a good
persona is that?
Well, just
vanilla oatmeal packet?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think you'd have people less concerned about his circles, his administration, his policy. I mean, there'd definitely be fire for his policy, but he's the brand that backs it up, and he makes it worse. The president himself makes it worse, exponentially worse, as just the way he is.
Or are we just more aware of it now?
Well, we can't not be aware of it. It certainly is in our face, but it isn't like a nice person in your face. It's an asshole in your face. Here's the other thing. Republicans and Democrats alike know the guy's an asshole. So it's not like you can defend the fact that he's some honorable guy.
Well, that's also not an indictable offense.
It's not, but it, but that's the thing. If you ever go to court,
it helps to have a good reputation.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you go to court, the prosecutor will do everything to stain your reputation. Even if you're the most stand-up person that got caught in a really bad situation, they will make you look like a child rapist. They will do everything they can. They will turn over everything to just stain your reputation. Now, the thing is the president really doesn't need a whole lot of help in that category in terms of looking acting like an asshole. So,
well, we're talking about somebody who helped bring about expedite the end of his first marriage by leaking photograph evidence of his first affair to the media himself.
Yeah. So anyway, the point of this entire segue is I have, you know, there's obviously been some interesting things that have happened. Shep Smith is now leaving Fox News.
He's leaving. OANN is emerging. You know, One America News. There's your new one.
Yep. So, you know, there's just interesting. I'm curious to see how. I'm curious of the potential pivots that could happen between now. And who knows, at least till the next election. There are. And before, at least just the beginning of this impeachment inquiry, you know, there's a lot of support for the president. And in fact, to be honest with you, a lot of, especially senators, there's only a handful that really came out in true support of the president. I think a lot of people were remaining quiet.
There's a huge reason for that. That obviously makes this a little different than 1973, aside from we've already went over the occupant of the Oval Office at the time versus now. But one of the issues then that you don't have now is that from day one, after he was sworn in for his second term, Richard Nixon was a lame duck. Mm-hmm. His political capital was expended in terms of just macro election to the senator. So now they don't have that issue. He's hasn't won re-election yet, and so he still has that viability that's going to keep as many senators from being quite as quick to jump on that bandwagon to save their own hides, because they know they're going to have to deal with this man come election and beyond, if he wins.
Yeah, which kind of leads into the whole
what
point.
What would it take?
Yeah, exactly. What would it take?
Like with Jerry Falwell Jr. We talked about this last time. Yep. Saying, no, there's nothing.
There's nothing. Now, the thing is he's not in political office.
But he sure moves in those circles.
He does. However, I think it's a theory, so take it for what it is, and be.
What's a theory?
What I'll propose next. It's a theory, and not really a theory, more of a hypothesis, or maybe just more of an observation.
Well, let's hear it.
And we talked a bit about it in precast, but you know, I think, and again, feel free to poke holes. I've thick skin. I don't think a lot of Republican senators and congressmen, namely senators, really got on board with this president until they realized that he was a force that may be too big to reckon with, that there was a lot of support for him in the districts where they are of their constituents. And they realized that at some point they sort of had to give in. And a lot of them went full bore the support of the president, but I don't know that a lot of them really truly, in terms of like diplomacy and politics, agree with any of the way he operates. It's sort of like
they weren't truly proselytized.
Yeah, they're not entirely on board with the extreme nature of the policies. I don't think any of them probably are like awesome friends with Stephen Miller. I mean, be hard pressed to say that a good chunk of these senators and other federal elected officials think that his policy and his frame of mind is really in tune with the majority of Americans. So that being said, I'm curious, because you see the Shepard Smith stuff, which is interesting, and even the president going after Fox News posting polls of increasing support for impeachment, at least the impeachment inquiry.
How dare you share the results of a poll?
So you can see the president going after Fox News, and then even sitting down with Murdoch and having a meeting there, that, you know, it's almost as if he's either trying to realign his allies, or he's trying to figure out a way to garner support or figure out where that is. And my sort of observation, maybe theory, is that the more that these things like Rudy Giuliani happen, or I mean, at this point, it doesn't take a whole lot. It just can be a lot, like fairly concrete evidence, like charges, indictments, et cetera, that not subpoenas by Congress, but I mean like actual federal charges, that there would be a point, maybe a domino's effect, where it'd take one really courageous senator or very well-known congressman to sort of break from the Trump mold and say, I'm out. I'm done.
Well, there is a tipping point. And, okay. You got to remember the Senate's an inherently weird body where at least half of those individuals on any given day, half of the Senate believes that they're presidential material.
Yeah.
Okay.
So again, where the tipping point is, I don't know. The tipping point could be another thing, or like another charge. It could be another sort of disgraceful, who knows, a tweet. Who knows? It could be anything. It could just be tomorrow one senator comes out and says, I'm done. I don't need you. I don't need you for reelection. I'm good. I'm
right. They're on their way out.
And here's the reasons why. I mean, there's more retiring senators in Congress, men and women who from the Republican Party that leave, and then they leave and they're like, dude, there's nothing about that that I like. And so it really takes is
that kind of smacks of a certain degree of cowardice, though, not to cut you off. No, but don't you think? 100%. I mean, like, so you've got all the chutzpah in the world once you no longer face any consequences.
100%. Yeah, I think it's wildly cowardice. And
I'm not saying that they ought to be coming out and opposing the president. Notice our audience members notice this as well. I've yet to weigh in and say what I think about his level of corruption or lack thereof, whatever, any of this. I'm strictly commenting from an amoral political perspective here, that political expedience and doing what one believes is the right thing mm-hmm. are two completely different things.
Yeah.
You know, and part of that tipping point is obviously Israel, Christianity, which I find fascinating because we're talking about someone who says GD twice in the same paragraph at a rally in West Virginia, yet is somehow the chosen one. And I know for a lot of folks that have the possibility to tip, you know, that middle 4% is what we're talking about precast, that they lean center left, they lean Democrat, they lean center right, they lean Republican. That's where the elections are won and lost. They're in that trench, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3-4% swing, but really, it is the Nathan Wellines and the Jack Devinneys that will swing this one way or the other. And for me, this I'm going to not say it was a final straw by any means, because I want us to really keep an open mind in terms of who we vote for, obviously, and this publication isn't going to endorse anybody, blah, blah, blah. But a really bad bloody nose for me occurred with the administration this past week.
Well, yeah, so let's... So the final thoughts on that is what would it take? And I think this next topic, A, is gut-wrenching.
Well, remember, this is why James Mattis left the administration.
Yeah, absolutely. And it could be something like this. And the more it stews, the more the more we get bad news, the more it might be enough. And to be quite fair, regardless of your viewpoint, left or right, on war, I think Dakota Meyer, he's a Medal of Honor Marine, actually out of 1-3 out of Kaneohe in Hawaii, received the Medal of Honor, and he just did a podcast with Joe Rogan, and I listened to the one on Jocko Willink's podcast first, just his entire story, and it's incredible. But really talking about like why we're at war, and what our intent is in those countries. And I think it's fascinating for anybody just to go listen to it, to get a different perspective. But the point being, we'll just dive into it. My point being is what we're alluding to are the Kurds.
We've had support of the largest ethnic group in the world without its own country.
Yep. In Northern Syria. And,
they bled alongside our boys, our men and women, in the fight against ISIS. Mm-hmm. And now that we feel that's done.
Yeah. And that's, I think, something to, in the point of the whole Dakota Meyer thing, is that, you know, the countries we are in, whether you think it's for an occupation or whatever the deal is, that the majority of our, especially today, the majority of our troops that are there, that are really combat arms, infantry, are there to advise. They're fighting alongside those fighters. They're fighting alongside the Afghanis. They're fighting alongside the Iraqis, and they're fighting alongside the Kurds in Syria. So it's not as if we're fighting the Kurds or we're fighting the Afghans. That doesn't exist. We're fighting for their version of democracy. And I know there's a lot of people, I think, in the United States, and I don't fault anybody for not understanding this, because it doesn't affect us. I think it's important to impress upon everyone for a number of reasons. One being, like you just said, these individuals fought alongside our special operations forces. They fought alongside our advisors to push back arguably the worst terrorist group to walk the face of the earth. And before we move into the sort of geopolitics of this, I will say, as a person that's probably center left, I was legitimately overjoyed to see all Republican senators and congressmen come out just denouncing the move that just happened.
It's outrageous.
It's gross.
Geopolitics for a minute here, and the implications. Again, we're talking about the world's largest ethnic group not to have a country, that we talked about splitting a third in Iraq. For this people has fought alongside us through the global war on terror against ISIS. And here we are now, we have the president saying, well, you know, they didn't help us at Normandy. There's so many issues here, it's not even funny. One, we didn't have any other Arabian allies contributing troops to Normandy. That's first of all. They don't even have their own country.
Yeah, there's no, like, before we even move on.
There's no there for them to conscript and send troops. I mean, you know, and last I checked, the president couldn't be bothered to help out the country during Vietnam.
Yeah, right. Captain Bonespurs.
Who is he to judge who helps this country?
Where did Normandy come from? Was that the only battle that he could think of?
Well, it's like a weird twist on Godwin's law, you know. They didn't help us with Hitler.
That was just baffling in the first place, but yeah, so there's two things that come to mind that are devastating from this.
That aren't geopolitical.
The first is, I mean, we're effectively leaving this group of people to the slaughter. If it indeed happens, you're displacing hundreds of thousands, but certainly thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah, it's what you get for helping us, Normandy. Global war on terror.
So the second part of this, and I don't even know if it's equally important. It might not even be as important, but I think the long-term effects, history will not look good. It will not look at this moment well. It will not be a shining star in history books. However, what this does...
The only hope for us at this point is maybe history and karma aren't paying attention because so much of late has been bad?
I don't know.
Maybe we get a pass.
So the other part of this is the long-term destruction of the erosion of the trust of other groups like this around the world. That... what faith could you possibly have in the institution that is the United States of America when you know damn well that the last group that helped out was abandoned? Left. I mean, literally from a tweet. Yeah, we're leaving. We're out. Syria's, Turkey's launching an invasion. And I guess that's the part that we failed to impress, is that by leaving the Kurds on their own, by pulling back, it leaves Turkey to invade northern Syria and create a buffer, because they find the Kurds, or they declare the Kurds a terrorist group. So this terrorist group that we fought side by side with in northern Syria to push back ISIS.
Right, the SDF, the Syrian Defense Fund.
We have effectively abandoned.
So, the reality is this, they've been wandering around Syria, but they've they've been there helping us in this conflict, and Turkey views the SDF as a terrorist organization. I'm not sure if Russia does or not, but they've got a pincer effect going on right now where the Russians have their force, obviously their forces to the northeast. Turkey is long, Ankara is long one of these guys out, okay? Yeah, so at this point, they're caught in this pincer effect. How can we attempt in the future to build a coalition, and if need be, under this president, with this precedent having been set? It's a very short-sighted move. It's a very, I mean, I don't know how to spend this beyond say it's
so preference. Let me ask a couple questions here, because I quite frankly don't have any good strategic move behind it. So, this is the reason Mattis left. This exact reason.
Correct. The former commander of my unit when I was a corpsman attached to the Marines, 1-7. You know, he was the former commander of that before becoming the commander of our entire force in the Middle East, before becoming Secretary of Defense. This is why he left the administration, was over the just, hey, we're going to withdraw and get out of, we're not going to have any role whatsoever. Because what Mattis and company weren't arguing, they weren't saying we need to have 120,000 troops there and nation build, but it was a reality of, hey, just having 1,000 allied coalition troops there in an advisory capacity, 1,000, that's been enough to keep this civilization, keep these people alive.
And just create some sort of stability.
And now we're just okay with saying, hey, you know, thanks for all the nights, but you know,
gotta go.
Your drunken ex old man is back, and we're gonna dip out. So, let him have his way with you.
So the next question is, so Bolton's gone. So who made this call? Who briefed the president and said, "Yeah, man, let's do this"? And then who was it? And then why?
Well, if he did it, Pompeo's not taking the blame for it. He's not taking the responsibility for it. I don't see what the win is here beyond the president can then say, hey, look, I said I was going to get us out of these conflicts. We're on our way out. And hey, that's a great thing. Okay, I think we should step down our role all over the globe. I think we shouldn't have troops in Germany anymore or South Korea. Okay, that's a different podcast. But it's the manner. It's all about the manner in which we exit. Okay,
yeah, right. At what cost?
We want another Saigon 1975 here.
Yeah, you have to ask. Like, I mean, whenever we were in the military, we would do. Hell, we do it in business today. It's you make a risk table. I mean, you literally weigh the pros and cons.
Well, economics. You're studying finance. Economics is a CBA, a cost benefit analysis.
Yeah, a cost benefit analysis, and whenever I do these things, I typically, if there's more cons than there are pros, it's a pretty risky investment. It's a pretty risky business venture. Typically, maybe you don't swing that way. You know, maybe.
I think it's an abysmal move with no end product that advances our foreign policy. If nothing else, it hamstrings potentially our foreign policy in the future, because, okay, it's one thing to be isolationist and say, hey, we want to get out of these conflicts. It's another on our way out the door to treat one of our strongest allies in the Middle East, next to Israel, our most vocal, ready to spill their own blood alongside us, has been the Kurds. And on our way out, that's our final hurrah, is to, oh, hey, by the way, thanks for everything you all did. Good luck. The bird.
Mm-hmm. The bird, the big middle finger. And the...
Yeah, like, seriously, it was like a, hey, we're out. Yeah. See y'all in hell.
So that's the gist of it. Not to mention, Turkey almost blew up a special forces unit. I mean, they were in really just like the danger zone, if that's what you call it.
I mean, it's like the whole thing. Can the whole Syrian region get a break? I mean, Aleppo has been destroyed for about the 300th time in its history now. There's nowhere, no country virtually we're aware of wants to take in the refugees in this massing human rights crisis. The current administration in the United States wants to cut the influx of refugees into this country to virtually zero. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, we're talking about we've been sending back Iraqi Christians. Yeah.
So I don't see what the game is. I'm legitimately asking this question to our audience. I cannot think of the sort of the right reason to do this. And it's not because I don't like Trump. It's not because it's nothing political. It's nothing. I mean, I just think of the time I spent in the service and meeting all different types of people and understanding a bit more, intimately the point of missions, the point of being in places and I totally get it. If even if you don't like the occupation of nations, if you don't like us being in the Middle East, that's fine. That's fine. However, this we can probably all agree was the wrong move. I respect the president's move to withdraw from Syria. I don't respect this move.
It's one thing to withdraw.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
It's one another to set fire to the place on the way out. Like, hey, I had a great time partying with you. I hope you survived this.
Like on the way out, just playing slow dancing in a burning room by John Mayer. So my legitimate shout out is, or question for the broader audience, because there may be someone who knows is a Middle Eastern expert or I don't know. Please, modstate@modstate.com, send me a message just to explain the strategy behind this.
And seriously, this issue is why not once but twice, while I still had a personal Twitter account, the account was threatened with suspension because of my vocal support for the SDF several years ago. This was 2017. I was still 2016. I was still living in Southern California at that point. And I expressed support for the SDF and they expressed support for the Kurds being, again, the world's largest ethnic group without its own country, without its own place to call home. And a lot of them are Christians. They coexist with fellow Arab minorities and they've had our backs here. So one thing I would like to say, if there's anyone of that group who's listening or anyone has any ties there, one thing I do want to go on record of saying, not that I speak for the American government by any means, but as an American who was in the military, who was in the infantry, and who appreciates the role that our Kurdish allies have played, I'm sorry. I would have gone about this differently. If I had any say-so, I'm sure a lot of Americans would, but on behalf of the red-blooded Americans that are paying attention here, and regardless of how I feel about occupation or war, like you said, this wasn't the way, and to our Kurdish friends, I know it seems trite, but I really am sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish that wasn't all I could say or do.
Yeah.
This is outrageous.
Yeah.
Please write us.
Yeah.
Let us know something, because hopefully there's some second guessing here. Hopefully there's some second thoughts that maybe we reverse course here. And I'm
happy to change my mind. I am not. I'm happy to have a good explanation that changes my mind. You know, and I'll go on to say, because I really don't think there's much more, quite frankly, just to hope that maybe there is some good outcome here. A good outcome, I think, would just be not an utter slaughter, but you know, then we're talking about displacement, et cetera, which is just a nightmare.
Well, that's the thing. We've dealt with this in the past with allies where we've helped them recover after a conflict. It's like, so we're not going to do anything here. Mm-hmm. Oh, not only are we not going to do anything here, we're really not going to do anything here.
So there is, you know, I like to listen to some pretty far right podcasts and just to let me, you know, the pulse of every sort of opinion that's out there. And it's very hard to scour the world wide web and find anything positive about this. Right. However, I had to I was kind of grossed out, just sort of laughed to myself that I listened to this one podcast, and literally the title of the podcast is, why do we care more about the border of Syria than we do our own border? That was the title of the podcast episode, to which it's run by a guy, Daniel Horowitz, who I really just, there's a literally about nothing that I see, that I see eye to eye with him about. He's a Jewish guy, very like, not that that matters, but I think it ties into sort of his religiosity. And his podcast is literally The Conservative Conscience. And he runs a website called it's Conservative Conscience or The Conservative Review. Anyway, who cares? And like that was the title of the podcast. And he's a border hawk. And literally, and I don't know if it's because he's Jewish. I don't know if that's why he has something maybe against Arab descent. I'm not trying to make assumptions. However, I couldn't imagine doing a podcast titled "Why Do We Care More About the Syrian Border Than We Do Our Own Border?" Which I think
it's a total straw man.
It is. It couldn't be. And he believes in himself. I mean, he believes in these views. He's.
Well, I would hope to publish something that asked on and hope you believe it.
But yeah, literally, as if you are making the comparison of our southern border with Mexico to the invasion of one country into. But I guess I suppose
decimation. Yeah, they've taken the glass sand that's there after the nuclear attack and put it in the microwave. Let's nuke it again.
I mean, I suppose he can. I'm almost 100% sure that he considers what's happening at our border an invasion.
There's no comparison, folks, between what's going on in the Nogales, Arizona, and what's going on or went on in what was Aleppo, Syria.
Mm-hmm.
There's no comparison.
Or the territories controlled by ISIS. Literally burning people.
Thousand-year-old, historic, priceless monuments.
Burning people.
Their own culture, mind you.
Burning people in cages, throwing.
Crucifying people.
Yep, throwing people off roofs, cutting people's heads off, raping women. Like, I'm sorry, Daniel Horowitz at The Conservative Conscience. How could you possibly make that comparison?
Last I checked, this is nowhere near. I mean, again, look at Aleppo, Syria, and then look at the alleged ground zero here of illegal immigration, Nogales, Arizona.
For a God-fearing man that his entire life is to make sure he has a spiritual alignment with the Creator and liberty and life that you could.
That's clickbait.
The thing, he's not even clickbait. Anyway, there hasn't been anything that
clickbait.
There hasn't been much that he's done that legitimately grossed me out. But the problem is that that guy has a million followers or something. I don't know. I'm making that up. He has an audience.
Well, that's why we're doing what we're doing slowly but surely.
So anyway, I mean, so there is that. The whole point of that is there is a mindset out there, even in America, that this was okay. That was the right thing to do.
It is not okay. This was not a foreign policy win. This is not an administrative win. This has almost universal condemnation from American military veterans. And if they could speak up, I'm sure I would bet my life on upwards of 80% of our service members, and I think that's me being conservative, would disagree with this.
100%. Now, why, one might ask in the closing minutes of this episode, why John and I are so upset by this. And obviously, I think we've outlined pretty clearly why, but I think the one thing we haven't touched on, especially if you're new to this podcast, is we've talked about the Kurds at length. In other podcasts, really concerned that something like this would happen. And I think we felt, at least I felt, that I didn't have to put too much stock in that scenario.
It'd be like letting it's the next thing to an Israeli contingent of troops. We just allow them to be butchered.
Yeah.
That's extreme, folks. The Kurds aren't as infamous in conservative evangelical circles in America as the Israelis are, but this is right there with that.
Well, it's people. It's humans.
It's people that it's have people. Shed their own, spilled their own blood alongside ours for our cause.
But not at Normandy, my friend. Well, look, I hope that...
I'd laugh if it was a joke, but unfortunately he was serious.
He was serious. Kind of a dark way to end a podcast episode, but what I'm really hoping is that in future podcasts there can be episodes, there can be some resolution of this that didn't end poorly, because I don't think any resolution of this is great. I think,
but we want to talk about the Kurds again, hopefully under better circumstances.
Yeah, indeed. So as of now, I mean, the most I can do is be happy and glad that I have this platform to really be opinionated about this.
This is something you don't have total solidarity on here, absolutely, because this is it's beyond heartbreaking.
And
it's immoral.
I think if there's a lesson to be learned here, it is that if you dig deep enough, and you and I don't have to, if you dig deep enough, that neighbor who you never talk to because of politics, or that person that you don't believe with, don't believe their beliefs, and it really is a point of contention that you can't have a conversation, that there are things left or right that you can absolutely rally around. There are things out there that you can both support.
This is one of them. This is up there with what we did in the Bay of Pigs, promising our allies we were going to be there with air support, and then we don't show up and those men got butchered like cattle. This is the closest thing I can compare that to.
And you know what? The one thing we can rally around, and it's very apparent here, is humanity. That's
Amen.
It.
Amen.
So, with that, my friend, until next time.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.